America was established largely for the purpose of religious freedom, but in some cases, that freedom has eroded. It's almost as if every square inch of religious freedom in our country must be fought for, despite our incredible beginning as a nation. One of the greatest groups in our day doing the Lord's work in this realm is First Liberty Institute, founded by Kelly Shackelford. Jeremy Dyes serves as the senior counsel of First Liberty, and he joins us now to give us an update on religious liberty, and we do this through the lens of a potpourri of First Liberty cases. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Jeremy, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sure. And before we get into the, a potpourri of current cases that you all are dealing with, just how about a quick comment about the founders of America and religious liberty, and was it important, and where did we go astray?
Yeah, this is year 250 for the United States of America, but the experiment of freedom that our country represents goes back even further than that, which was a country that was founded on the principle that there needed to be a last best hope for religious freedom in addition to the freedom generally in this country. And when the founders got together to create this country and formalize it into its actual thing, they included something very unique and frankly different from all of world history to that point, a constitutional guarantee to the free exercise of religion and the freedom also away from establishment, meaning that the government was not going to tell you how you must practice your religious beliefs or where you must practice them and all the rest. And so what we have for the last 250 years is a charter of rights that is founded upon the notion that we have a duty to a higher being than even government. And if that's true, then we must be provided the space in which to achieve that duty and practice that duty without any interference by the government. So we stand athwart world history as a nation saying religious liberty is a qualified good.
And First Liberty has been on the forefront of fighting for religious liberty. You all, for example, championed the Kennedy v. Bremington school board case or whatever, the Coach Kennedy case. And I understand that was very significant for religious liberty.
Oh, it truly was. In fact, just recently, the United States Department of Education came out with its revised guidance on religious liberty, constitutionally protected prayer, that sort of thing in the schools of our nation, telling every school district in the country that because of Coach Kennedy's case, students and teachers are now more free on campus than they've been in years, decades, as a matter of fact. And so my message to students across this country is to remember that you are the most free of anybody on a high school campus. Teachers, you also have a lot more freedom than you've had before. And parents, because of the more recent case and the Mahmoud decision from last year, you have the right to be able to seek accommodation for your religious beliefs for your students. So now you not only have reading, writing, and arithmetic that are important when it comes to the education of your children, but also religion too.
All right. And let's go ahead and talk about a couple of the current cases that First Liberty is dealing with. And, what's the constitutional principle at risk?
Yeah, look, we got one case that's called it's the Mission Church case, which is a church in San Diego area that partners with a group called the Christian and Jewish Alliance there in San Diego. And they had an event at the church, and this is a downtown church where there's two steps out of their front door and onto the public sidewalk. There's not a lot of room. They had an event that you had to register for, and a bunch of agitators registered for it under false names. And during the talk that was given by a former member of the Israeli Knesset, talking about the importance of, Judaism and Israel and all the rest of the things that would be common to that kind of a discussion, packed house, and all of a sudden people started standing up in, quote, protest. They were yelling and screaming and cursing. They would not heed any instruction to leave the environment. Instead, they had to be carried out in some cases, only to be met outside the door with a bunch of their friends who were yelling, screaming, cursing, playing sirens over loudspeakers. They formed a gauntlet that the parishioners had to leave through to be able to get to their cars. In some cases, they were followed for blocks back to their cars or parked elsewhere. There was another event not too long after that where, they're using a band shell there in San Diego. And people are having dummies laid down on the ground so that you'd have to run over these, quote, bodies, their dummy bodies, People are jumping on hoods of cars and banging and screaming at grandmas that are driving into this event. The point is that these agitators, rather than going through the typical process of expressing your disagreement through peaceful protest, went much further than that. They interfered with the religious activities of these groups, the church in particular. They intimidated people. They threatened injury of people. All of these things are against the law in what's called the FACE Act. You may have seen this recently in Minnesota, where Don Lemon and his friends invaded a church. Similar situation there in San Diego, where the FACE Act now prevents, through criminal means, will hold them accountable for expressing themselves this way. And it makes, we filed a lawsuit on behalf of the church and the Christian and Jewish Alliance there, saying that they're entitled to civil relief as well, injunctions keeping these people from ever coming back, and including some financial penalties that the act provides for. So you can express disagreement in this country. We welcome that. We expect that in this country. What you cannot do is intimidate or interfere with access to a religious gathering like this and expect to get away with it.
You know, it's so interesting that historically, I mean, in the last 30 years or whatever, ever since the days of Bill Clinton as president, the FACE Act was always kind of against the pro-life protesters, you know, and but now it's being used to protect Christian groups, churches, for example, you know, from these kinds of attacks that you described, including, as we all saw, as you noted, in Minnesota.
Yeah, the FACE Act stands for the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances. And it was designed to protect against people who were being terrible in the 90s towards abortion clinics. I mean, assassination attempts, snipers, it was bad. And the FACE Act was designed to protect them. But Senator Orrin Hatch said, look, if we're going to be doing this, I understand the need, but we're also going to protect our houses of worship because those are actually constitutionally guaranteed for protection. And so there was inserted a provision that the same standard that's applied to reproductive health facilities, whether that's pro-life or pro-abortion, by the way, I've actually represented some pro-life pregnancy care centers who were vandalized after Dobbs, same protections, they're entitled to them. But those same protections are going to be applicable also to churches to make sure that people who are trying to exercise their free exercise rights under the First Amendment are going to be given the space to be able to do so free from an intent to injure, an attempt to injure them, or any attempt to interfere with access or intimidate these people who are gathered for religious purposes.
So it's a good thing that that FACE Act has that letter C. Used to mean clinics, now it means churches, I guess, you know, in today's environment. Okay, I understand there's another case, Holy Trinity Ukrainian Catholic Church. Tell us about that.
Yeah.
And where is
this? This is a church in Collier Township, Pennsylvania, right outside of Pittsburgh, that's had a cemetery for years, a little ways outside of Pittsburgh. In fact, it's in a flight pattern to the final approach to Pittsburgh International Airport, maybe 6 miles as the crow flies to the airport. The church wanted to erect a new chapel on this cemetery area. And the township basically said he can't do that. And they said, the only building you can build is about the size of the current mausoleum, which is, you know, maybe 10 or 15 feet high. It's very small, not adequate to be able to do their religious services. You can't memorialize the dead prior to the date of the letter, June 9th, 2025. That's very important to the Ukrainian Orthodox Catholic tradition, rather. And you can't ring any bells except for 3.5 minutes per day and only after 9 o'clock in the morning. Again, ringing the bells, as the pastor says, bells are the lips of the church. That's how they proclaim their news and how they celebrate their faith. And so those are all problems, in addition to the fact that the township just simply denied them the ability to build a building. Well, look, churches, chapels, they're all the same thing, really. They're big buildings in which people gather to talk about something, right? In the case of a church, it's to talk about religious things and to worship. Well, right next door is the Regional Carpenters Union. It's in the same town, same township. It's in the same zoning code. The township sees no problem having a 3-story office building with a 40,000 square foot auditorium for the Carpenters Union, the Carpenters Union Hall, where they can gather in a big open space to be able to talk about things. In their case, political things. They've had President Biden came through there on a stump speech. Governor Josh Shapiro has been there. That's not a problem. But as soon as you have a church trying to build on their property, that becomes a problem. And then, by the way, this is just for fun. The township says that the bells are noisy. Well, number one, you can't hear them even over the whir of the jet engines that are coming across with regularity above them. But even if you could, that space is also zoned as of right for amusement parks to be able to enter. So you could have a roller coaster up there at any time of the day running itself and people screaming on it. But how dare they have these very soft, low-level decibel bells that would be proclaiming in their news the lips of the church, you know? And so we filed a lawsuit against Collier Township saying you need to stop this discrimination. It violates the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act and the First Amendment.
All right, tell us about the LifeWise case out of the state of Washington. Interesting, because that Bremerton case with Coach Kennedy, that was also in the state of Washington.
Yeah, it's right next door in Everett, Washington. LifeWise is a national program. LifeWise Academy picks up students at the parents' direction and permission during the middle of the school day, takes them in a big red bus off campus where they have volunteers who are teaching them about the Bible. And then they bring the kids back at the end of the session and the school day goes on. They work with school districts, thousands of school districts, I think 1,000 school districts across the country. Very common in almost every circumstance, very well received and no big problems, except in Everett, Washington, where they have run up against all kinds of problems. Permission slips are just incredibly onerous to even obtain and provide. They got to provide them every single week. They got to get out of the carpool line, go inside. Other organizations are allowed to drop them off once in a year, and then they're done, right? But only the religious program has to do more. They have pamphlets that they put on the community information table right next door to all the other ones for the United Way and all the other groups that are out there, but not for LifeWise. They're not allowed to be there. And then the community fair, and just talking about the community organizations that the school's students can take advantage of, the YMCA and the United Way and all these things, well, they can come, but not the religious LifeWise Academy. They can't be there. And when this became a real issue, when we sent a letter saying this is going to be a problem for the school district, we would like you to solve this rather than us having to sue you for it, one of the board of directors, one of the directors of the school board, takes time during the school board meeting to say, and I think I'm quoting here now, I'm pretty sure I'm close to it. He says, I want to make it very abundantly, extremely clear, yes, I have animus for LifeWise. Well, that level of hostility towards religion carries no weight. You can not have that at all. That is a very big problem for the school district in Everett, Washington. And they're going to be held accountable under the First Amendment. So we've filed a lawsuit, and we're hoping to be able to protect the parents who want to have their kids going to LifeWise and at least have the school district be kind enough to refrain from admitting openly that, yes, they have extreme hostility towards religion. They have animus towards this religious program. That is unacceptable in our country.
Yeah, you know, it's almost as if to some of these magistrates and bureaucrats, Christian citizens are second-class citizens, it would seem. Okay, we have enough time for wall builders. Why don't you talk about that, and we can get a closing thought from you on religious liberty in general.
Yeah, wall builders, of course, talks about America's religious history, and they wanted to advertise on the subways of the nation's capital, the Washington Metropolitan Area Transmit Authority, which is WMATA. But WMATA has a policy that does not allow you to advertise on the sides of their buses or in the subways if your advertisement is a controversial issue, a religious issue, or religious speech itself. And so they denied Wahlbutter's ads that had a picture of George Washington kneeling in prayer with a question, Christian question mark. To find out more about the faith of the founders, go to wahlbutters.org. And then also the giving of the Constitution to the first Constitutional Convention, one of those famous paintings that's out there. I think hangs in Congress, if I'm not mistaken. And they said, no, you can't do that because of the word Christian on it. And the website, you know, talks about all kinds of religious things. So we sued them, and we've obtained a partial victory, but now we're at the motions for summary judgment. I think we're going to be very successful here because you just can't simply say, well, look, we're going to welcome the speech of any number of places, but not the religious folks. Those aren't allowed to advertise here. That is creating a second-class citizenry.
FirstLiberty.org for more information. How about a 20-second closer, Jeremy Dice, on the importance of religious freedom?
Well, religious liberty is our first freedom, and it's incumbent upon all of us to defend it. I want to remind you that we are more free today than we've ever been. So my encouragement to everybody is to go live like a free people.
All right, Jeremy Dice. Thank you. Keep up the great work. Your whole
team.
Okay. God bless you now. Bye-bye.